So it came to be that a human person ended up with about 5 days in New York, between visiting his sister in Toronto and flying home to Sweden. The amount of people in New York was a bit much for him, so the day before leaving, he made his way to the beach. On his way, he bought lemonade from a kid, which was good and cheered him up. Best $2 spent in New York so far, he thought, as he made his way to the beach, sipping his lemonade and enjoying the sun and feeling that the sea was close. After jumping in the water and drying a bit in the sun, he set about trying to write a story. He started by drawing a map of an island held up by the gigantic outburst of a whale's blowhole. But after a while, he put it away. New York, even on the beach, is full of noises and people, and the person was not really able to ignore it enough then and there in order to get started. Or he was just lazy. Anyhow, as he was getting up to go, the person sitting beside him asked, "Didn't get anything written?" Our traveler explained about the island and the whale, and that no story had come, and he asked if his companion had anything to start a story with. The companion, a man of indistinguishable age, perhaps 10 or 15 years the senior of the first person we started our tale with eyes interested in things, then told him about the bridge. There was a picture of the bridge too. Photo, it was nice. And the man showed the traveler the photo, and he told him of it. It was a strange thing. In days past, when New York really was new, the beaches were empty, and outside some villages, on some islands, it was covered with forest. John lived in a cottage in one of the villages. He was the son of a mother and a father from Amsterdam, a city far away in a country called Holland that his mother and father would speak of longingly. They would describe the canals and all the houses and the flowers that lined the canals. They couldn't go back, his dad said, because in Holland they couldn't pray as they wanted. So his parents and their neighbors insisted. So his parents and their neighbors instead worked hard to make the island like they wanted it. They made straight streets, and with all the wood surrounding them, they could build much larger houses than in Holland. And they filled their gardens with flowers. Not the same ones as in Holland. His mother would often sigh for the tulips back home, but colorful and beautiful nonetheless. John had a good life, with loving parents and good friends, but as he grew older, a restlessness grew in his soul, and it always grew strongest when he caught sight of the bridge. There was only one bridge. It connected their island with its lined roads, horses, and flowers, and houses, to the world, which as far as John could see seemed to be forest. John was not allowed to go over the bridge. John was a good kid. So this would, for almost anything else in the world, mean that he wouldn't do the thing. But on the other side of the bridge was the world. Of course, he understood that on the other side of the ocean was also the world, but that seemed much further away, and he couldn't see it every day, and there wasn't a bridge there. He could see the forest. When John and his friends, Greta and Hanneke, would play along the shores, sometimes John would see these little heads poke out from the bushes on the other side of the river. But as soon as he would tell the others, the heads would vanish into the bushes, and his friends would laugh and say he was seeing ghosts again. Greta and Hanneke would be so absorbed in their imagination soon again, and John would join in, but he could swear he could feel eyes rest upon him from the other part of the shore. Or maybe his friends were right, and it was just his imagination. The three friends did have a wild imagination. The games they played would take them to icy caves in the Arctic, where bluish and greenish light reflected from along their icy igloo walls, from the northern lights above, and Jan would still be shivering when he came home, and he would need an extra blanket. Other days they would be living in bubbles, deep below the waves, where the water was cold and dark outside, and all they saw were distant lights from strange fish luring other fish into their jaws. On such evenings, John would gasp as for air when he came home and lay spread-eagled, drinking in the air and the lights and the colors of the sky, and so on. The seed of many of their games were the collection of books at Uncle Hans. He had several books, and some even had pictures. They were travel accounts that Dutch sailors had written on their many travels among the seas. Uncle Hans, if you hear it echoing sometimes, it's because I'm sitting beside a piano. And sometimes it like reverberates. Anyway, Uncle Hans even had a globe of the earth. And as he had been a sailor himself, he could tell the children of many places on it himself, especially of the South China Sea. John's parents would humph and say that Uncle Hans was making up half the stories. The children really didn't care. And anyway, no one else on the island had been to even half the places Uncle Hans had. And sometimes there are more important things in a story than exact truths. Unfortunately, it was not only their parents that disagreed with Uncle Hans on this. The pastor would often speak in his sermons about how the Bible alone was God's nourishment for man's soul, and he would look very pointedly at Uncle Hans while saying this. Uncle Hans would always just smile gently and silently. One day, however, as the three friends were returning from the Sahara, they noticed a large group of people outside Uncle Hans' house. In the middle of the crowd stood the pastor, and opposite him, Uncle Hans. John did not hear what the pastor said, but Uncle Hans was silent as usual with the pastor. The pastor kept saying words, and after a while Uncle Hans shrugged, went into his house, and soon was back, carrying Jan's favorite book in his arms, The Travels of Marco Polo. The pastor took the book, nodded to Hans, and walked down to the docks. He flung the book far out into the waters, and the sea swallowed it. The villagers watched quietly. That night, Jan felt as if the island had shrunk from a safe haven, opening out the world in infinite directions to a tiny, tiny bubble. He could not sleep, and when the gray of morning came, he quietly slipped out of his bed and made his way down to the bridge. Before dawn had broke, Jan had quietly and carefully made his way over to the other side. On the other side of the bridge, a dirt road ran into the forest. Jan followed it, and soon the bridge and the island were no longer visible behind him. Not that he looked. He was absorbed by the forest. It was around him, and he was absorbed by the road in front of him, which showed more world with every turn. As the sun rose, it raised mist off a river that John passed. He paused and watched wisps of cloud drift over the water. It was very magical, and Jan wondered if perhaps it not actually was magic. He was also starting to wonder where food was going to come from. An owl landed on a branch. It looked at him and turned its head from side to side while still looking, which looked very funny. The owl seemed so serious that John felt it would be impolite to laugh.
"What are you doing here?"
John said in what he thought was an owl voice. The owl turned her head to the side, like tilted it.
"What are you doing here?" said John.
And the owl tilted her head to the other side. John felt silly. He was talking to an owl, so he sat down on the grass. The owl fluttered down and stood opposed to him, flipping her head from one side to the other, back and forth. And after a while of looking at the owl and the owl looking at Jan, Jan had a feeling that the owl might actually want to say something to him. Now, this was a conundrum, because owls, as far as Jan knew, couldn't speak. And anyway, they'd hardly speak Dutch. So, Jan scratched his head. He also thought for just like a fraction of a second about maybe catching the owl and frying it. But then he was like, no. I shouldn't do that. This owl seems to be talking to me. I shouldn't do that. So he didn't. So he tried tilting his head and then tilting it back. And the owl did the same thing. And they kept this up for a little while. And then Jan thought of an idea. He brought out, he had like a little piece of bread left. So he brought out piece of bread, and he tilted his head twice fast. And then he tried to look as, huh? Where? As he could. And like pointing in different directions. And that's a pretty big test for animals to see if they can understand when you point in directions. But, this owl was very smart. Actually, yes, owl was way smarter than Jan, but he didn't know that yet. And the owl understood, okay, this means food, and you're like wondering where there's food. So the owl flew away, and Jan said, she thought, well, he was a very well brought up kid. So Jan thought, fiddlesticks, and sat down on the grass again, his tummy rumbling very, very loud. But maybe 10 minutes later, he saw a speck on the horizon, and a swoosh, and a swoosh, and a swish, and the owl landed and dropped not one, but two freshly killed mice in front of him. And Jan looked up at the owl, and looked at the mice, and he tilted his head two times to the left, and the owl understood immediately that that meant thank you, because he smiled loads at the same time, and he started making up a fire with his tinderbox, because everybody had a tinderbox in those days. And back in those days, you were really good at making up fires, and they had a fire in like 10 minutes. It was roasting those mice, and skinning them, actually first skinning, then roasting. And he ate them, and he shared half of the other one with the owl. And he tilted his head to the left two times again, spread out on the grass, and watched the clouds pass by, and fell asleep. But the owl stayed. The owl watched him. The owl had been watching him for quite a while, ever since he crossed the bridge. And he would wait for him until he woke up. But the owl was in no hurry. He closed one eye, tilted his head a little bit, and closed the other just a bit, and then opened his one eye. And he fell asleep. But an owl can sleep with one eye open. Anyway, this owl could. And that's what the owl did. The end for now.